Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about leadership attributes. And of course, we are excellent leaders, but let's think very carefully about our attributes and about attributes that, well, we could nurture and we could get more of. And that would be a very good thing, right? Right, yes. So let's think about this. What types of attributes, yes, hello, I can talk, do successful leaders have? Yeah, what have they got? Let's think about this computer for a second. Hang on. It's not believing me. There it is. Hello. Well, yeah, you know, of course, that this radio show is really a computer done. And so sometimes I get strange little messages, and I have to think about them and go, no, don't do that. We're on the air. Shows it's a live show. It's kind of like, oh, let's all sneeze. So what attributes do successful leaders have? A lot of folks are talking about patience. Yes, so true. You need to have some patience. And you need to be a good listener, right? Mm-hmm. And how about some empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Yeah. I'm going to call the next one confidence in yourself. Yeah, confidence in your leadership abilities. Because if you don't evidence confidence, then your participants will feel like, oh, she doesn't think she knows what she's doing. Maybe she doesn't, and we're in the wrong spot. Right? Yeah. So you have to show confidence in yourself. Right? Mm-hmm. Yes, we're going to go for expertise. That has to do with confidence, too. But yes, that you have expertise. Right? Yeah. Go away. There we go. My computer's feeling cranky today. How about a good reputation is an excellent leadership attribute, right? Yeah. To be a model of civility. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to be an example of that, a model of civility, because we're going to ask our people to follow the civility rules, which we're going to talk about, and we're going to not be able to do that if we don't act in a civil manner. That's the tricky part, right? Yeah, we have to act in a civil manner at all times. We'll talk about what happens. Well, okay, you guys want to ask, let's finish this and then I'll answer that question. Hang on. A lot of people are asking what to do if you've kind of blown the model of civility requirement, attribute, right? Okay, let's do it now because a lot of you would like to know now and then I might forget later. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now has, right? Yeah, some of you have been here a long time and you know this, but some of you are new. And at their core, they say we will not be rude to one another. We will take turns. We will act in a respectful manner to each other, right? We won't lose our temper. We won't get nasty. We won't say something, well, unpleasant, yes? Mm-hmm. What happens, this is the question that's being asked by quite a few people, which is why we've stopped our list, and we'll get onto it. What happens when or if, because really there shouldn't be a when, but especially when you're somewhat inexperienced, what happens if you lose your civility as the leader? You do something and you know as soon as you do it, It was really not a good thing. But you just kind of lost your cool for a minute there. Sometimes you have a participant or two or seven who are really trying to get to push your buttons, right? Because they would like, for a variety of reasons, this exercise in civility and in consensus building and in, well, leadership to fail. And so they're really kind of goading you, which is what happens usually. Usually we don't, I've never seen anybody lose their temper just in general. But sometimes they've kind of had enough and they accidentally go uncivil. If that happens to you, and it might, and we're going to try very hard not to, right? But if that happens to you, the main thing you want to do is not ignore it. Because everybody's seen it. It's too late to ignore it. If you're going to ignore it, you would have taken three deep breaths and not done it. Right? Right. You're not going to ignore it. You're going to do something that you would require if someone else went uncivil. You're going to apologize. Right? You're going to use yourself as an example of don't do that. It's not. It's against the civility rules. Right? Yeah. Don't do that. It's against the civility rules. We're going to use that as a good example of no. We're going to say no. We are not going to. This was accidental. Sometimes things happen. We are not going to have the civility rules violated. And I accidentally lost my temper for a second there, and I apologize. Well, all right, let's assume, so until you use yourself as a good example or a bad example, whichever way you want to look at it, and you go forward. People are asking what happens if an apology is not enough, if you've really done something egregious or somebody has really done something egregious. I'll assume that none of you will do this. Because you're going to take three deep breaths and remember that we have civility rules always in force for everyone, and that everyone includes us. If for some reason you have really gone beyond an apology, which is the question, and you, of course, would never do this, but you might see it at some time, I think the leader, which is not you, because you would never have this problem, right? Right. Civility rules are always enforced for everyone. I think that you, that the person might need to recuse themselves if you've gone so far that you can't take it back. I once saw that happen. It's rather unusual in when you're dealing with professionals, usually. And quite frankly, I do a lot of corporate, so I deal with a lot of, I see other people who are professional mediators also, and attorneys and things like I am. So, and attorneys and people like that usually understand that they can hang on, you know, they can hold it in. But sometimes, I once saw that happen. And they said something that couldn't be taken back. They called one of the parties a serious, several sentence worth, really tone of voice, ethnic and family relationship slur. Got it? Yeah. I think you got to recuse yourself after that. There's no coming back from it. It's just, how are you going to say, I apologize, even though I really think that about you? Ah, gee. I'm not so sure about that. I think that you're going to actually have to say that you can't do this anymore, and you're not the right person for it, and leave. Just apologize and explain that it was just beyond what you really thought. I don't know. I suppose you could say you were drunk or something. I don't know, but it was so breathtaking. breathtakingly unprofessional that I know none of you would do such a thing. And this person did indeed stomp out of the room in a manner that really I wouldn't find acceptable to any kind of a participant, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, the civility rules must be announced so that everybody understands them. I announced them right ahead of time, and then we're going to go on to... We have several more on the list that we're going to talk about. But people really want to know this question now. The civility rules, I announced them, and we're going to be rude, not going to be rude to each other and have respect and take turns and like that. Even if I've seen this group before, and even if I'm pretty darn sure they're not going to violate the civility rules, they're fine. They're fairly in tune with each other. But I announce it anyway, just so we all know. And they all nod their head and smile and go, yeah, we got that. We would never be uncivil to each other. What kind of people do you take us for? But just in case. And it's too late to enforce the civility rules after civility has left the building, right? So they need to be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. As in each time, immediately, consistently, and fairly. Some groups will never need you to talk about the civility rules again. Some groups will need you to talk about the civility rules every 20 minutes. This is just the way of life, right? Right, yes. Immediately, consistently, and fairly, and remember that we are models of civility. You cannot enforce something that you do not do. Another topic that we must have as an attribute for a leader, we're going back to the list now. We just kind of diverged because we wanted to ask the question now, is a leader should have good media skills. Even if the leader is not exactly the media spokesperson, you don't have to be. Sometimes I get an expert to be the media spokesperson. I've got fancy credentials, right? I've got two kinds of law degrees. I've been doing it a long time. But sometimes there's an expert that's got more specific to this credentials. I don't know, some sort of science, some sort of technology, something that's truly impressive. They've written articles and books. They've won awards. If they say so, people go, oh, really? I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, it's like when Stephen Hawking, remember him, the physicist and like that? Yeah, y'all know who that is. He wrote books and he said kind of stuff that I didn't really think was exactly true, but because he said it, you have to kind of look and think about it and go, oh, really? That is an idea. Yeah, you know what I mean? So sometimes you need somebody like that to be the media spokesperson because it makes the media and the public, which is what you're really appealing to, because you're not really, the media is public opinion, is why you deal with the media. And you go, oh, really, this person supports that, huh? That's a lot of credentials. Let's take a second look and see if we think that's true, right? Yeah, especially if the opposing side has a different expert saying different things, and they're equally impressive. So media skills. You need to be an example of enthusiasm, just like you're an example of civility, right? And a good leader has to be a good consensus builder. Mm-hmm. With outsiders, with employers, with participants, with the opposition, right? Yeah, let's reach consensus. Let's reach a working agreement so that we can go forward and not get kind of bogged down, so that we can find an amenable solution, something that's amenable to everybody. Right? Yeah. Okay, so now let's talk about these attributes. I know we've already kind of talked about civility, but we'll talk about it a little bit again. The first one was patience, right? And the main thing, yes, Muhammad says the main attribute of patience is the ability to listen as a third party impartial. the ability to listen as a third party impartial. Remember, that's what you are. You're not supposed to be taking sides. You're the leader. You're the third party impartial. You are getting people towards consensus, getting people towards understanding and empathy. And you need to really listen in order to do that. And listen, not, you know how you listen with your voice because you interpret things? Let's listen with the other party's voice and see what they think, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing you need to have the patience to do is to answer questions. It might not be clear, especially process type questions. I get a lot of those because people don't exactly understand their assignment, for example. They don't exactly understand what we're gonna do next time. They've never seen it before. We've done it 4,977 times, but they've never seen it before. And it needs to be clear what the expectation is, right? Yeah. So you need to answer questions. Sometimes questions can be referred to your assistant. You don't personally have to answer every question, especially the process ones, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Lee and others are saying you have to have the patience to repeat the instructions. Yes. And not just the same word slower. Ever see anybody do that? Somebody asks what, and they say the exact same words that were confusing to begin with, slower, like you're deaf or something. No. You need to repeat instructions, especially important ones which give a, for example, something that somebody needs to do. You need to be to repeat yourself at least 3 times different ways because people need to hear it and understand it and remember it. I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on. Oh, pardon me. Oh. My goodness, I have a frog in my throat. So you need to have the patience to repeat the instructions and repeat them in a clarifying way, a different way. However many times to the people. I like to have, if it's an instruction, if it's an assignment, in a polite and civil way. Remember civility rules. Because you don't want to imply that you think somebody is stupid. I like to have the person who has to do the assignment repeat it. Tell me what they're going to do. Because sometimes it is not at all what we had in mind. They've just misunderstood. And we've misinstructed. And it's good to catch this before it's 6 months later and they've put a lot of work into it and they've veered off the path into a ditch. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yet they're the patients to also explain the process. Says Sarah and others. Yes. Explain the process. We've never seen it before. Explain what it is we're doing. Explain how it is that we're going to communicate. Explain that we're going to keep everybody in the loop, which we are, right? Yeah. So explain the process. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people are now talking about having the patience to have empathy. Empathy is our next topic. Mm-hmm. Remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. I now understand why you think that way. Right? Yeah, I understand your position. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I understand it, and I understand why you have it, which that's two important things. Excuse me, 1 second. My goodness. Thank you. Excuse me. I thought I took care of all of these little hygiene things beforehand, but I had to blow my nose because it's not going to work out. Yes. So you need to have the patience to have empathy. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. in order to have empathy, somewhere along the line, in some polite, civil, and respectful context, and not necessarily all in this order, we're going to ask the 5W questions so we can find stuff out, right? The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Right? Yeah. They'll give you to understanding of how come somebody's taken this position. Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? And why did you have this response? Right? Said in a very respectful manner and more filled out, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is true, too. Margaret and others are talking about understanding the cultural foundation of a response. There's two kinds of cultures. Well, there's probably thousands of cultures, but generally, it's a generic general thought. You've got kind of family, ethnic, where you came from type cultures. And you've got corporate cultures that go with the business, right? Right. The understanding of cultural foundation is very important. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to determine if especially the more ethnic ones, if the preconceived notion that we're dealing with, because that's what we're dealing with, is personal experience, or learned culturally from somebody that the person respected, a family member, an elder, somebody like that, a religious leader. Yeah. People ask me which one's worse. You know, I think it depends on the situation. They're about equal. But it's good to understand whether or not you're dealing with experience. Maybe even let's find out if it's experience with these parties, with these exact people. And it didn't, well, probably because we're talking about preconceived notions, probably didn't work out so well. They're usually not positive, although they could be, right? Not, they're neutral, but what you're dealing with here is something that's been worked on before, right? If it's experience, then that's personal. And we might be able to shift around the committees and the groups and like that. If it is ingrained, learned from society type cultural foundation, a pre-existing notion, right? That we're going to have to explain that this person that we're dealing with at this, you can't remove the bias completely. No. It's not, first of all, it's not even our job. And it's too ingrained. But we're going to do a workaround. We're going to show that this person at this time, under these circumstances, is fine to work with. They're an anomaly, right? We're really not, right? This is true. But they both think the same thing about each other. The lack of, well, the preconception goes both ways, right? And they need to get along. And you'd be surprised. This really works. These people at this time are fine to get along with. We're not going to talk about the rest of them. They might not be. Who knows? But at this point in time, we're going to get along with this person. And understand that we can deal with them. They're fine. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. After we get that kind of empathy, when other issues arise and the groups need to talk to each other, they actually choose each other as the front person, as the person to talk to, because they know that they can. They worked together successfully before. Yeah. And so it's kind of a contact person on a different side, not exactly the other side, but a different side, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Then there's corporate preconceived notions. All preconceptions, all biases have at their core the idea of this is how it's always been done. This is how we do things, right? Yeah, we don't deal with this kind of issues because it's just not how we do things, right? Yeah. But that's what's called a comfort zone, where you really know this is how things have always been done. Therefore, the pattern's been set, and we'd like to do it the same now too. Yeah, that's corporate. Well, that's both kinds of culture, really. Both kinds of preconceived notion, both kinds of bias. But this especially is ingrained sometimes in corporate. Sometimes it's written down. But it's an actual guidebook of how to handle situations. Sometimes it's helpful. It's a foundation. We can work around it. Pardon me. Sometimes it needs to be rethought, right? Yeah. And both of those are really comfort zones. A comfort zone is when you know what's supposed to happen and how to handle it because this is the way we've always done it and it's happened lots before, right? Yeah, that's a comfort zone. And that's nice, except for the fact that now it's no longer valid and we need to look at that. And it's painful to leave your comfort zone because your comfort zone is comfortable. You know what to do. You know how to respond. You know that your response will be acceptable and that you won't lose your job or something, right? But we need to revisit because they're not working anymore is the reason to step outside of comfort zones, right? They're not working anymore. For one reason or another, they've become obsolete and we need new comfort zones, new process, right? Right. The next topic that we're going to talk about is that your leader needs to have confidence, right? Yes, confidence. In your own leadership abilities, right? I feel confident in myself. Therefore, I can exude confidence. People understand if you don't feel like you should be there, if you don't feel that you should be the leader. You'd be surprised. People can smell that. They can feel it. They can feel fear. They can feel hesitation. I've seen people actually announce that they don't think they should be there. No! Of course you should be there. You need confidence in your leadership abilities, right? Yeah. And this means that we're going to, well, be the person in charge, right? Yeah. Who do we need the confidence of? How about our participants so that they are stable and that they really know what they're doing? How about our employer needs to have confidence in our abilities, right? Yeah. One of the ways we do that is that we bring the employer into the loop. Yes, thank you. Remember that on this show, the word employer is used generically. It is whoever it is, whatever it is, could be a board, could be a committee, could be something that's not a human. But it's whoever it is that was smart enough to bring us in as leader, smart enough to convene this group, this conversation, right? Yeah, that is who we are calling the employer. It does not necessarily denote an actual employment relationship. In fact, it probably doesn't, but it might. I mean, I get paid a lot and hired a lot and like that. So it is whoever brought us in, whoever that we are somewhat reporting to. Doesn't have to be formal as in written reports, but someone who we need the good opinion of is our employer, right? Right. Confidence, in the employer has to have confidence in your leadership ability. How about outsiders? Yeah, the other group. The outsiders that are watching the other group. The media, right? Yeah. And because they make public opinion. And we're going to get to the last one, that we're going to have confidence because of our expertise, because expertise is a separate section. Yes. So, we need, even if we feel kind of unsure, we need to have a veneer of confidence and actual confidence on most of it. But let's just say that we've got something that's kind of tricky. Mm-hmm. We're going to need to have the confidence to know that we know what to do about tricky. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to our next topic, which is expertise. Sometimes we have the expertise to find out what should be done. Sometimes a participant, someone in our group has the expertise. Hey, they're not just there to watch me talk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to go outside to get the expertise, which is often. Mm-hmm. So, outside being yes, actual experts. So, what gives us our expertise? Yeah, experience. We've successfully handled a similar, very similar incident. People are talking about exactly the same. I don't think that anything's ever exactly the same. We're dealing with humans here. Oh, we are, pardon me. Oh, allergies. Excuse me. It's kind of, oh, hello, and how is everyone? It's kind of allergy season in my part of the world. But then again, I tend to drink water during the show no matter what, don't I? Mm-hmm. I'm successful. Expertise, your expertise, is you've seen this before. Different permutation. It's never exactly the same. And you will get kind of an area of expertise because you're going to be very good at it. And people say, well, we had a similar problem, and we called in Sue, and she really got straightened out in record time and under budget. And they go, oh, that's good. See, our next topic is going to be reputation. That goes to your reputation, right? Yeah. And so you become an expert in certain areas just because you do them a lot successfully, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have sufficient expertise, no, not sufficient personal experience, you need to know when to call in an expert. I tend to call them in regularly. First of all, we have budgets usually for it. But I like to hear different opinions. I like to have experts who are really doing it now in their field so that they know the very most recent. They know what's really happening in the real world. Now, people are asking, who should we choose as an expert? Sometimes you don't choose as leader. Sometimes the employer chooses. I have it in my contracts. I have this in writing. I like to have an opinion, and I'd like to be able to refuse an expert. I don't do it very often. I do it if the expert is very kind of inflammatory biased for a certain outcome that I see has more to it than the employer thinks, more moving parts, more idea of unintended consequences. And I'd like to see that expert address it, and I'd like to hire someone also, not necessarily to replace, but also to take a look at it, because I'm not satisfied that we've gotten the whole picture. And I hate the law of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. So I tend to call in experts. Who is an expert? In my opinion, somebody who's in the field. That doesn't mean that sometimes, yes, this is true. I sometimes think, depending on what the question is, I think somebody who is the leader of a group that failed is, or a member of a group that failed, is oftentimes the best kind of expert because they know what happened. They have a real opinion about it. They'd like to see successful outcome, right? And you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You've got it. You've got this, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like those kind of people for experts that are going to be media spokespeople. I do like fancy credentials. I don't personally think it makes them any more important or impressive in their knowledge. In fact, somebody who's really been in the field probably has more knowledge. But I do like that the media and the employer will just get all excited and quote them and like that because they're impressed. So there's a certain amount of practicality, and there's a certain amount of impression and like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the media is a funny thing. They like it all packaged up in kind of a nice bow. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Seven others are saying that when you initiate research, you know when to call on both sides. Yeah, you know what you're doing. Initiate research. I picked it up, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. The next one up is going to be our good reputation. Mm-hmm. And that comes from using our expertise, right? Our expertise in knowing when to call in somebody else. Our expertise in being able to have competing experts and know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. Our expertise in really getting to the bottom of this, really having empathy and confidence and expertise and like that, and just going forward and reaching a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. This is true sometimes. Do it more in seminars. I must confess this. Quite a few of you have seen some of our seminars and like that. We do a lot of role playing, R-O-L-E, where you switch sides from what you really think and you argue in an opposite point of view so that you can understand it better. So it leads you to really think about it and research it because you want to know what you want to say, right, and how you want to argue. So you really do have to research it and really think about it, and it makes for an interesting preparation so that we understand all sides. And I know I talk about the law of unintended consequences a lot, but you really don't want to see it. And if we really, really have role play and look to our competing experts and like that, we'll down amount the problems that we're going to have later when we try to implement this plan. Mm-hmm. Good reputation, people are talking about honesty and truthfulness, yes? Yes, I think this is extremely important. Okay, you're going to get a good reputation for being successful, for getting a good outcome, which is how you get to be kind of an expert in a certain field. Oh, people asking what my specific expertise. If I have a specific expertise, because I deal a lot of multinationals, is to be called in. In fact, I try to train my clients not to do this so much, and just call me in first. But to be called in when a group has been unsuccessful and become kind of the new sheriff in town and get things going. If I have an expertise, that's it. I can pretty much get anything to come to a successful outcome with the civility rules and the enthusiasm rules and like that. And I think the trick to enforcement is the enforcement. Mm-hmm. And we might as well talk about it here with the good reputation. Well, let's do good reputation first, and then we'll do enforcement because we're in the middle of that. The main thing you have to do for your reputation is win. Yes? No. The main thing you have to do is always keep your word, in my opinion. Because, all right, I've got a good track record. I have a lot of success and like that. And that's lovely. But your reputation is kind of more for success, is kind of different than your personal reputation. You can tell me anything. And if it is within the parameters of what we're doing, of our agreement, and it is something that I need to know as third party impartial, but you don't want who told me divulge to the group, I will not tell who told me. It's confidential. People feel confident in saying to me, I want to be anonymous, but I think you should know this, but don't tell anybody I told you. Well, they won't tell you stuff if you don't have a good reputation for keeping a confidence like that. I will use the information, but I will not, and I will divulge the information usually, but I won't say how I found it out is the key to it. Yeah, well, it's important. It goes to truthfulness and to keeping your word. Mm-hmm. People are asking what happens if the secret, so to speak, is illegal. I don't know what I'd do. I've thought about that in my day. I've never actually had, well, I've had some stuff that's kind of edgy been told to me, especially about business practices, of somebody else as a participant in the group, for example, or the opposition business practices. I've always not had to divulge who told me because we've gotten around it. We've gotten the illegality taken care of in a different way. If it was really egregious and it was personal to the person telling me, I'm not a priest, right? Because priests have the confessional. I don't know what I'd do. It would depend on the circumstances. It would depend how really morally and ethically reprehensible it was. I mean, I don't know what you could tell me within a business context that would be that horrible, but I suppose there could be, and I think I would have to think about that. I think if it was truly illegal and truly bad, I'm like murder or something. I killed my business partner and stuffed him in a garbage bag and it's in the river. I don't know, that kind of a thing. I think I would breach anonymous. But fortunately I've never had that. But I mean, something that big is beyond the scope of reasonable business ethics, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, not everybody. I have kind of high standards. I've got a real bad case of scruples. I think everything should be really, really up and up and like that. And I know this. And, yeah, I really do. I have really high standards for myself. And I have to think about them and whether or not I'm imposing my preconceived high standards on somebody else, and it's really unreasonable, and you know, I should get off my high horse. People ask me which ones. Okay. This is between us, right? Yeah, this is a public show. I truly don't think that you should sleep your way to the top, as in have sex with important people and kind of blackmail them and work your way up. But that's kind of an ethical gray area because people do it, and they do it willingly. I mean, nobody's being raped or assaulted or anything like that. And then they're friends, and then you help your friends, and like that. I have to think about – see, I won't do that. I never have. It's against my ethical standards. It's against my moral standards. But it's not – illegal, and it's not even considered reprehensible by most people, right? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of vote for that's the way business is done type thing, and that's not something just as a gossip item I would divulge, because it's just gossip, really, right? Yeah. Although it's interesting to know the interrelationships of the people in the group. Because then you can have that in the back of your mind when you, I don't know, make teams, separate them, whatever, right? Yeah. So I probably would keep, I would definitely keep anonymous for that. But for for a really bad thing, well, that's different. I mean, you don't want to keep a dark secret that's going to blow a hole in your soul. I mean, that's beyond the scope of any kind of a business agreement. We talked about civility. Model of civility is our next one up. Yes, the reason that most people asking how come people want to be anonymous, the reason usually is a very valid business one. The reason usually is because they've got a position of importance or power, and they agree with whatever it is we're trying to do, but they don't want to come out and say so in case it doesn't work out, because it could impact their position, right? But they know something. They have some expertise that would really be helpful and would really, we'd like to know, oftentimes about some sort of an unintended consequence we didn't have the smarts to even ask about because we didn't know there was a question. Does that make sense? Yeah. We didn't realize there was a question. And somebody tells us, well, this group of people is going to be really adversely impacted, but don't tell anybody I said so. Well, this is important to know. And thank you for the help. And no, I won't mention your name because it might impact your employment, for example, your position, right? Right. Mostly people want to remain anonymous because they don't want their name used in case it doesn't work out. Like, we can understand that. Modeling civility is our next one up on the list, right? You can't enforce what you do not follow, what you do not do, right? The civility rules actually are mighty fine after we all get done with our consensus building, right? Because they lead us to a way of life, a way of dealing with other people that's life-enhancing, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. In fact, I tell that to people, and I go, oh, yeah, I could be civil to my spouse. What a concept. Yeah, and so I actually, you know, people aren't all that subtle. I actually come right out and say stuff like that. You know, this is good for life, for when we leave this room too, right? The other thing I do, and we might as well talk about on the civility rules because people are asking, you know how people used to pass notes in class? Now they text and send funny pictures and like that. I have a ban on that. I don't necessarily like to confiscate your actual physical device. A, they all look about the same when they sit in a pile. And B, it's kind of, people like to have it on them in case there's an emergency. But we do not blog, comment, Instagram, whatever on earth it is that we want to do about the process while we're in the process. Too early. And whatever we say will be read by the opposition and used against us because they will take it wrong. They won't really take it wrong, but they will say that this is what you said. And you go, no, that's not at all what we said. But it'll be taken out of context, for example, right? Right. Is that what you wrote? Well, yeah, but that's not what I meant. No, let's not write it. Let's have a rule that while we're in process, let's have privacy. Let's have a blackout, so to speak, right? Well, even after the process, even after we're done and we're working on it, we're working on it. And that's why you also have a media spokesperson, right? Because you've got somebody to present. And we're not just talking about newspapers, because for heaven's sakes, they're kind of a dying breed. We're talking about every kind of media, all the stuff that comes out. And one of the things is that you want to be presented well in the media, which is why you have a media spokesperson, which is why you send out pre-written things for the media to pick up about what a wonderful thing we did here, because it's just human nature. If I, as a citizen reporter, because that's what a lot of people are nowadays, a blogger or something, if I see something and I can just copy it and it's well-written and like that, and I'm not against it, well, wouldn't I repeat that? Right? Instead of some sort of a boogly mess that's hard to understand what people want. So we're going to kind of put out stuff. We're going to put out media releases. And include everybody. We're going to be a model of enthusiasm also as a excellent leader. It's one of our attributes. Primarily, okay, it's good for us because it makes us feel more happy and enthusiastic and it tells ourselves a positive story. But it's really for the benefit of the participants and the employer and everybody else because it makes them feel confident. Sue really thinks we're going to make this. Look how hard she's working and how enthusiastic and how she's really keeping track. Yeah, and let's get some empathy and understand. Oh, yeah. We're gonna get this done. And it's especially heartwarming for those who have kind of not made it in the past. They've come from a position of, we can't do this, it's not doable. Well, yes, it is. If you cannot muster enthusiasm, hopefully genuine enthusiasm. I think fake enthusiasm really shows us fake enthusiasm. Does that make sense? Yeah, we're going to try to muster really genuine enthusiasm. If you can't do that and you've gotten kind of burned out, it will show. And maybe you need a break, right? Maybe you could take a little sabbatical. It depends on your situation, whether you can hold your spot or not. People are talking about getting a co-leader, kind of like a vice chair, a co-leader. Co-leader implies equal in position. My first gut reaction is always no. Because that gives you another whole negotiation layer of somebody who needs to work with you and is considered to be the leader also, right? Yeah, I don't like that. Sometimes it's unavoidable because usually when it's unavoidable, I don't know how to say this nicer, and I'm going to apologize in advance to anybody I've worked with who's been in this position, but it's not rude, and it's not uncivil, and it's not a criticism. Usually the co-leaders I have worked with, I have been the person that's really on the line, really doing it, and they're kind of figureheads. They're people that have a position, the CEO, for example, and they are interested. It's not that they're not interested, but they don't really have this urge to micromanage in any way. That's fine. That kind of a co-leader is fine because they give gravitas to the process, right? Because they've put their name to it, and obviously their name means something. They're important. But they haven't really argued with you in some way on a day-to-day argue with you basis. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they're kind of, well, people call them passive. Not so much passive. More so busy because they're important people and they're doing important, busy things. And they would just like you to do it, which is why they've got you as the co-leader, and give them a report as to how it's going so that when the media asks them or somebody asks them, they'll know what to say. Usually they'd like kind of a 2-page synopsis that they can read on their way down the hallway to the next meeting where somebody's going to ask, right? Yeah, and so that's fine. It's not that they're uninterested, but the reason they've got you as the co-leader is because you're going to really do it. The last topic with leaders is consensus builders. Remember that you do need to build consensus all the way around, Otherwise, you will not be able to get a workable outcome. And that's the key to it, isn't it? I like theory as much as anybody else. I do. I like to say, oh, this is lovely, and oh, the world will be a better place, and we're all gonna have cookies now. Hey, I love cookies. But what you want to do is you want, when you're no longer holding hands with the participants, right? You want them to be able to take our successful outcome and run with it into the future. It's not something that occurs in a vacuum. You want to be able to say, well, look, this is what we decided. This is what we're going to do. Let's implement. Let's figure out how to implement and take it step by step, as we've been taught, and apply the civility rules, because that's the rules, right? And we're going to go forward, right? Yeah. So we've got consensus so that we can go forward and really do it. And we haven't just wasted everybody's time. I don't like the ones where just it's for show. And the employer declares it a success. Well, that's nice, but it wasn't really a success because we didn't get anywhere in the real world, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So who do you have to have consensus with? How about your participants? They all need to agree. Mm-hmm. Let's think about prior leaders and their kind of power struggle and how they'd like to still be leaders too, right? Maybe they can do something helpful that they can be a leader of that's a little sideways so that they don't feel, well, like they've been crushed. Mm-hmm. And consensus is always a bridge to the employer. Remember, employer being a generic word, right? Always invite them in, a bridge to outsiders, a bridge to public opinion, which is the media, right? Yes. And my friends, this should be a bridge to talking about the recipes, but we've run out of time. I know that happens occasionally. We'll try to do them next time. But we had such an interesting conversation, which was good. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.